Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Podolsky Method Podcast. We are back with a brand new season two. This is our first episode with I have a wonderful co-host with me, Shawnee Harley. You might have heard our episode a while back. Shawnee is a two-time Olympian as a former assistant coach for the Canadian women's basketball team and one of the most highly decorated coaches, highly certified coaches in Canada with over 26 years of elite coaching experience. She's currently running her program Fear to Fierce, which we'll talk a little bit about on the show if you haven't heard about it yet, with her company Winning Matters. I'm your host, Coach Ilya. I'm a certified public accountant. I'm a level four certified USA hockey coach and elite hockey instructor for the New York Junior Rangers. I run a skate sharpening shop called Sharp Skate New York and the creator and host of the Podolsky Method Podcast. And today we have a very special guest for this specific show with us. And this show is a little bit different than anything you've heard before because we want to really explore the voice of the athlete, youth athletes around different sports and different leagues and even different locations, as well as their parents, and really connect to what coaches and parents think we're saying and what the athletes are actually hearing. And so for this season two, episode one, we have Sophia Verse. And Sophia is 13 and she's a seventh grader. She's a middle school treasurer and she plays soccer, tennis, cheer, and hockey. And Sophia is currently playing for a 14U hockey team and Washington Pride minors team. Sophia, I'm going to kick it over to you so you could tell people a little bit about yourself and, you know, where you come from and what you like.
Hi, my name is Sophia Wears. I'm 13 years old, seventh grade. I've been playing hockey for a couple of years now. I actually started in figure skating and always saw people playing hockey, and I was always like, I want to go do that. Both of my parents were kind of not into the idea at first, but I convinced them, and here we are today. Yeah.
That's awesome. So when you first got to hockey, you just knew that was your thing?
Yeah. Like I said, I did figure skating and I always liked the skating part, but there wasn't much else to it besides kind of dancing. So I was like, I'm going to do something else that's more physical. So hockey was right there.
Wonderful. And I know, Shawnee, you worked with Sophia through your program. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that before we jump into some of the questions.
Well, I work with athletes to help them figure out what's going on in their head and their heart, cut through the noise, and unleash their inner tiger. And Sophia, when she first joined Fear to Fierce, like all of them that when they first join, they think the problem is this. They think it's here, but it's actually over here. And I think Sophia will be able to tell you, you know, through the podcast today, how she learned the difference between playing it safe, doing things that you're already good at, and what it means to do the opposite. So we have to face our fears in order to become fierce. And I think Sophia has done that.
Wonderful. Thank you, Shawnee, and thank you, Sophia, for joining today. Before we jump into the questions, I do want to mention that you can find Shawnee on her website, shawneeharley.com. You could please take a look and visit my website at thepodolskymethod.com. There's a lot of resources, podcasts, recordings, and some blog information and other tools. And, of course, just mentioning a few partners for the show, Print Only With Us, which is a full printing shop, hence the new swag.
Ooh,
I'm just testing it out, but they're great. They can print anything from paper to metal to t-shirts. So check them out. They service New York City and Florida. I mean, they service, I think, everywhere, but their hubs are in New York City and Florida, I should say. Make sure, of course, you guys are checking out the Junior Rangers programming and looking into the summer programs. There's a lot of camps and a lot of ball hockey going on this summer. So keep it moving over the summer. So jumping back to our discussion, we have a few questions that we'd like to go through as we progress through the show. And of course, our show is always free flow. But if you had to say that there's one thing that you don't like when your parents say, what would it be?
Yeah, I would definitely say when I'm being compared to others. And I know that might seem very generic, like, oh, look at Susie and look at her point shot, because her point shot is really good. And I understand what the parents are trying to say is build off of other people, but sometimes that's not always what the athlete hears. Because I often hear, you're not as good as these other people, so act like you are as good as these other people. When I know that's not the intention, like looking back at the situation, but while I'm hearing it and while I'm hearing, you're not as good as other people, I don't feel good in what I'm hearing, so I don't want to listen to it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that a lot of athletes feel that way, not just from parents, but also from coaches as well, right? Have you had that experience on the bench with a coach, when a coach compares you to another player?
Yeah, definitely. And I know coaches also don't mean it. Like, it's not their intention.
And so how does it, is there a difference in how you internalize that from a coach versus from your parent?
It's definitely slightly different, because your parent is going to be the person that's taking you home from every game, and you have to interact with them a lot more than your coach. But also your coach, you respect more in the, they know about the sport you're playing, like, especially because we're talking about hockey here. They know how to play hockey. They're definitely certified in it in some way, shape, or form. And parents don't have to be that. So I feel like your coach's opinion is often more valued than your parents' opinion, whether it's consciously or subconsciously. But yeah, when coaches say it's slightly different, but it's still, I'm taking it as I'm not as good as this other person, so I should act like this other person.
Sophia, does it, if I substituted a different word, tell me if this feels it. When you get compared to someone else, does it feel like judgment?
Yes, definitely. It feels like I'm being put under pressure because another person is better than me. And usually they're right. But that doesn't mean I want to, like, hear about it all the time.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's an interesting dynamic, because it seems like, you know, the support we want to hear from our parent is different than, you know, what the coach is saying. And so, you know, do you have instances where your coach and your parents are saying different things, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So, like, I had a coach last year where I would be told to do things that sometimes I would hear my parents oppose, and hearing that, it's so conflicting, because, like, I trust both of these people. I trust my parents, I trust my coach. Who am I supposed to trust? In my mind, at least, I think that you should trust your parents more, because they've been with you your entire life. But it can definitely be hard, because that's just my opinion. Someone else could say your coach, because they probably have more experience in hockey. Like, there's a lot of ways you can take that statement that other people wouldn't agree with. So there's definitely, like, a whole, like, plethora of actual solutions for different situations. But my opinion would be, go with your parents.
That's interesting. Because I know that a lot of kids are conflicted in those situations. So I really appreciate that perspective.
Because you said it, I don't like it when they compare me, because I feel judged, which is another way of saying it makes you feel lesser than. But you also said, I understand their intention. What, how, what should they do better?
Maybe present it in a different way. Like maybe specifically say at the beginning, I'm trying to not compare you to this person. I just want you to watch this person and see what they're doing. And a lot of people, like my parents specifically, do a really great job at that. But sometimes there's no way around it. And you just have to like tell your kid, look at this person's point shot. And no matter what you do, in my mind, that's you're not as good as this person. So look at what they're doing and copy them because you're not as good as them. So I don't know if there's a way around it in every situation. I'm sure there is one, but I don't really see one.
That's fair. That's fair. And that's great that, you know, you're sharing that perspective because a lot of times, you know, the parents and the coaches don't really think about it that way. Everybody kind of speaks their truth and spins their narrative, and they don't really pay attention to the voice of the athlete and how confusing that may be, right?
Yeah.
So thinking about the opposite of our first question, if there's something that, you know, if you could finish the sentence saying, I like it when my parents ask me about
what? When they ask me how, like coming home from a game or a practice, when they ask me how I think I did before they tell me how they think I did, because that gives me an opportunity to give my perspective with zero biases on it. So like if I think I've had a bad game, sometimes my parents will be like, oh, you had a great game. And sometimes the vice versa. But it's definitely helpful to have two perspectives, especially since I'm the one on the ice. I can't remember or see everything that happens. And they're the ones watching me. So they can see the majority of the things that happened. And I can grow and learn from the experiences I have on the ice and hear about them off.
Yeah, very true. And does it make you frustrated if you had a bad game or you feel like you had a bad game and they're saying good job?
Not really, but at the same time, I do feel a little bit of frustration because it's like sometimes I know I had a bad game, but the thing that I think people should be saying and not that is probably like, here are things you can improve on after that game. Like, I saw you do this. Maybe try this instead.
Sophia, can you also, so what I heard you say is you would like to speak first.
Yeah.
So say on the car ride home, you would like your parents to ask you your opinion.
Yeah.
When they do that, or just in general, do you think parents are very good at listening to the answer, or do you think they jump in right away, they listen for 10 seconds and then jump in right away with their opinion?
I do feel like sometimes they are guilty of that, but I think at least my dad does a really great job of listening to my entire, like what I have to say, and then saying his opinion. So I think that definitely is a big problem, and parents need to be aware of the things that they are doing. And just like you say, holding the athlete accountable, but the athlete should also be holding the parent accountable of things they're doing and things that would improve the athlete, because the athlete has a voice too that needs to be heard for more than 10 seconds.
Sophia, how old are you again?
13.
What?
I'm really glad you asked that.
Ilya, how's that 13?
I don't know. She's more advanced than most of us put together. So I have all a comment here from OGIG saying Sophia sounds like a very well-rounded, intriguing kid and with many interests. So very impressive, so, and good luck. So, and then there's another one. So you have some comments coming in your way. You're doing a great job with sharing your thoughts here. So we really, really, really do appreciate that.
Thank you.
And Ilya, what I want to point out, so what Sophia has learned, and she's got some pretty great parents that have learned this as well. Can you see there's this common, like they're learning how to be good communicators rather than the parent just dominating and leading from the front the entire time. And this is one of the things that we work on in our training is the athletes must be allowed and encouraged to have a voice. And parents can practice becoming better listeners. Because Sophia, when your dad, when you have that conversation, you get to speak first. Your dad lets you listen. Your dad, sorry, listens to the whole thing. The whole thing. He listens. Then he gives his opinion and you kind of go back and forth. Does that make you feel empowered or disempowered?
Empowered.
What about when he comes in first and just says his opinion and listens for 10 seconds?
Do you feel a lot more empowered?
Yes. Right.
You know, that's so great because I struggle with it. And, you know, especially very early in my coaching career, you know, I was, you know, very wild and very intimidating at times. Right. And so as I progressed, I also learned to kind of tailor my ego, because I think a lot of those emotions as a coach and as a parent comes from ego. Right. And us thinking it's about us a little bit, because we can't really understand other people except through ourselves. And so when we have to put things through ourselves, sometimes, even now, you know, years into coaching and having a very open conversation with my kids, whether it's my students or my own kids, you know, I find myself in moments where I start speaking and I'm like, nope, nope, stop. I pull it back. You know, it's hard. It's probably one of the hardest things. And Shirley, I'm so happy that you have your program. And, you know, for those folks that haven't seen it or haven't heard it, you should definitely check it out, because I think it is imperative. It is a game changer just in the way we talk with our kids. I mean, it's, and again, I speak from personal experience because I made quite a few mistakes, you know, coming up. So, so jumping into the next kind of set and piggybacking off what you said, I wanted to talk a little bit about the car ride, right? And what you would like that car ride from the game or practice or to the game be like. What would you like to hear in that car?
All right, to the game. Because of Shawnee, me and my dad have developed a system where we set a few goals for the game, like things that I specifically want to do or work on in that game. And it does depend, because for the last few games of the season that just ended, we had to fluctuate between forward and D, because I started playing a D a lot more than I did in the beginning, or like the normal season. And so we came up with a few things, and it was really helpful for me because I had something to work towards more than just get the puck, score a goal. So a few of those things have been things like battling in the corners or shooting for corners of the net. And obviously a few things are specific to forward or D, so we could not include some things sometimes. But I had a lot of fun being able to have goals that my parents have set or that I have helped set to work towards and accomplish.
Okay. And that's on the way to the game or practice, right? What about on the way back after it's over?
Of course, like I said, getting my opinion out there first and feeling heard definitely helps. And then we can spend a solid 20 minutes talking about specific plays that either were good or bad. And if they were bad, how to improve them. If they were good, how to keep doing them. So I think that the car ride definitely sets your mental perspective, either going into the game or going into the next game. So I think the car ride is really important.
That's excellent point. And I actually recently had a Dr. Cassidy on my show in episode 42, where he talked about self-reflection. And it just, you know, that's exactly what you just mentioned now. I feel like that's so important in your ability to say, hey, this is how I felt. This is how I, you know, here's my goals. Did I accomplish them? Or do I still have to do something to accomplish them? What is that that I have to do? If you don't have a path in mind, it's hard to reach the goal, right? We need to have some sort of an action plan to get there.
Yeah. I think this is such an important conversation, this piece. When families come in to work with me, it's so interesting, because I'll talk with the athlete And they're like, the thing I dread the most about hockey or whatever sport it is, the thing I dread the most is the car ride home. And I try to get a ride with someone else. Then I go and talk to the parents, and the parents are like, you know what? The car ride home is my favorite. Like, I just can't wait for the car ride home. And I'm like, and your athlete just told me the exact opposite. But what this shows me is the parent believes that the car ride home is for them. Like, this is their time because the athlete can't escape. This is their time to impart all of their knowledge, go over every play. And the athletes are like, la, 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 I can't hear you. Let me just get my phone. And then Ilya here brings in something else that's really important. As soon as the athlete tries to escape from the parent, even though they can't physically get out of the car, put their headphones in, go on their phone, they miss a really important part, the self-reflection. What did I learn from the game or the practice? If I had a do-over, what do I wish I would have done differently? What were some things that are like, wow, I want to keep doing that thing? But when the car ride is for the benefit of the parent, the athlete loses this really great learning opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's so true. And again, I feel like it's a practice, right? It's something you really have to do over and over and over again to get good at it. Like, I feel like what Sophia just mentioned, having a plan with her dad on the way to and from the game, like, this is what you're going to do. And Shirley, I'm sure that you were a part of that creation. and I feel like that's the part that people really ignore or tend to kind of overlook. You set in your ways, and it's hard to say, hey, I can do something better, you know, because it requires self-reflection. It requires you to acknowledge that you did something incorrectly, or you did something maybe not as great as it could have been, right? And not everybody is able to just, you know, do that in the moment. A lot of times it takes, I'm sure you can speak to better than I can, but it takes a lot of work to get people over the hump to say, hey, just because I got something wrong doesn't make me a bad person. Because I made a mistake on the ice doesn't mean I'm a bad player. You know?
Well, what I believe, and I'm listening to Sophia, and I'm listening to this relationship, right, with her parents, you can hear the healthiness in it. This is a skill that we can all get better at. There's another piece to it. For Sophia to want to engage in conversation on the way home with her parents, to willingly engage in conversation, to go over play by play, what you can see that her parents have done well is they've set up a safe place for her to land. So Sophia can go in and say, man, I thought I sucked today. Or, geez, you know, I wanted to go into the corner like a jungle tiger, and I went in there like a zoo tiger. But the parents then allow this place to land, that it's okay to be imperfect. Mistakes are normal. We're not going to beat you up. We're not going to judge you. We're not going to throw you under the bus and then run over you five times. Because that is often why athletes don't want to hear from the parents on the way home, because it's just one thing after another that they didn't do well. Now the athlete feels, I don't have a safe place to land, so I'm just going to go on my phone.
Right, right. And, thinking about being on the bench and sometimes losing ice time, or coach, reprimanding you on the bench, and then you get in that car and you hear it again, you know, instead of some support, it kind of just hammers you down. You know, I feel like if I had, if everybody had a role, like the coaches, and he has to maintain the bench and kind of maintain the ice time and control the on-ice situations. And, you know, obviously ice time or game time in any sport depends on a lot of factors, right? What the kid is like, what he feels like that day. Maybe the kid's not feeling well. Maybe he's just not in the mood, right? All those things play into it. But when they get into the car, they need the support. They need the encouragement, and they need to be able to self-reflect, which is all the things that Sophia kind of talks about. And Sophia, I have a question for you from one of my athletes, and I think he's using his mom's account, Christina. Christina is a great friend of mine. She coached with me on the bench, and she helps us tremendously with the podcast and the show. And this is her son, Jude, Coach Ilya's athlete. How do you ignore people that are negative to you? And I'm guessing that includes other players.
Yeah, so it's, for me at least, definitely the majority is other players that I have to stay with on the ice, off the ice, at team dinner. And we had a situation happen last year where there were things happening in the locker room that made one player feel singled out and not safe. And I was her friend, and it felt really bad to see all these negative comments being made about her. So if I was her, I think the best thing you can do to ignore them is to go to your coach and speak to your coach about them first, because your coach will know how to take care of it. He or she will know how to direct you to take care of it. And to ignore it yourself, you have to understand, like Shawnee will say, that you have a percentage of an opinion. So if someone says that you did bad, how much of like your opinion on a play you just made are you giving them? How much does their opinion matter? And the answer that you should be giving to fully ignore the negative is 0%, because they know nothing more than you do. So you have to always be like on lookout for yourself and not for others, because you're the person that is important and that matters in this situation.
I love that. And Sophie, when somebody else in that locker room is getting hazed or bullied or put down because whatever the situation is, what can you do as an athlete, as a teammate?
Again, I went to the coach with a few of my other friends that noticed this, because there was obviously like the social hierarchy of the team, and I don't feel I was on the good side of it. So me and a few of the other people like went to our coach and asked what we should do. And there was another coach in there that also gave us some really helpful advice. So we went to her, we said, we talked to the coach about it, and luckily the thing subsided. But I think talking to your coach and talking to maybe even adults or parental guardians, it's so helpful to just have a second opinion from someone who isn't in the locker room.
Yeah. And can you share maybe one thing that the coach suggested you do in that situation?
My favorite thing was kill them with kindness. So even though they're talking bad about you, you can always talk nice about them instead. It makes them feel like so little that they will just stop. Like, killing them with kindness is honestly one of the best things you can do. And I know it sounds very generic, but it actually is helpful and it does work.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because I think that that's probably one of my principal philosophies, because there are, as a coach, and as, you know, you're always kind of criticized, and you can never make everybody happy. Just that's kind of like the job you take on when you become a coach. And I'm sure Shadi will tell you the same. But I think that, you know, when I speak to my athletes, and, you know, we had incidents obviously where, you know, kids kind of like the better kids would pick a little bit on the weaker kids. And similarly, you know, obviously I would address it as a coach in the locker room that it's unacceptable and that's not how we behave, and also try to be a role model for the proper behavior, right? Especially on the ice, because it doesn't matter how much ice time you get, doesn't matter how good or bad you are, you will always have the respect. You'll always be respected as an athlete, right? That does not change. And I think that I was telling my son the other day, because there are coaches that you know, that are loud and yell and kind of get in your face. And, you know, obviously it takes time for us to spread the message. But when they do, I tell them, what happens? What can the coach tell you when you say, thank you, coach, can I try it again? Can I do that one again? Can we do that drill again?
Yeah, I think That's really helpful. Like, I've been in multiple situations where I've seen a drill that I've liked so much that I've asked the coach, especially in the spring, things that we've been doing to prepare for the spring season. Like, hey, coach, I really like that drill. Can we do it again next session? Because I wanted to prove a point with a certain drill, or I think I can do better next time because I learned this thing. So definitely also communicating with your coaches in that aspect. Communicating is the best thing you can do in hockey. Yeah. So I think that just even if you don't like a drill that much, just going up to your coach and maybe saying, I like this drill, or can we do this drill? Because your coach will love it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, a lot of times, even when the coach are in the heat in the moment, or a parent, and they're just kind of like, and then you say something like that, like, it kind of stifles you right away. And Shani, I don't know if you would agree, but it kind of, it's hard to yell through it after that, or it's hard to be mad when somebody says, okay, I appreciate it, can I try it again? Like, how can you continue to be, you know, proving your point?
It disarms.
Right.
It diffuses. Diffuses the opposite of ignite. And coaches are ignited all the time, right? Coaches need a diffuse. And that's what happens with that comment. It's like, it's a diffuse. We could help coaches with that if we learned how to diffuse better.
Right.
Before we move on to the next one, I really want to point out something that Sophia said that I think is very wise. One of the biggest reasons that athletes drop out of sport is because of mean teammates. And especially when they feel alone and they feel like they don't have any allies and they are singled out, and everybody in the locker room sees this bad behavior happening and no one does anything about it. And Sophia, the fact that you kind of, there was a group of you that rallied and then you went and took it to the adult. I hope people heard that, because culture flows downhill. Culture flows downhill. The coach is responsible for what goes on in the locker room. And if the coach doesn't know what's going on, they need to find out, because there's a reason all of this bad behavior happens in the locker room. Mm-hmm. So the coach can't see. That's not okay.
Yep. Yep. Very true. A lot of times this stuff happens behind the back, and as soon as the coach or the parent walks out, that's when it starts happening. And I do want to make it a point to say that a lot of times kids mirror behaviors and conversations from their parents. And in the beginning of the season, I always warn parents about kitchen talk. And I call it kitchen talk because I feel like the parents will be standing in the kitchen and chatting about how bad the coach is, or how bad the organization is, how bad the teammates are, how good their kid is, and everybody else just doesn't deserve to be around them, and things like that. And then that conversation can be, and usually is, heard by the athlete, and they internalize it, and then that creates a lot of tension and a lot of aggression in the locker room. But it's the wrong aggression, right? It's negative, you know. So I always warn parents about that, and they said, you can disagree with a coach, and that's perfectly fine. We all have opinions. We're all not perfect. You want to do better, get certified, get on the bench, become a coach, and help. Help. There's not enough coaches out there. There's not enough people helping with the game, any game, right? We hear it all the time. There's not enough referees. We have a referee crisis. We don't have enough refs because people just don't want to do it. They don't want to get yelled at for a weekend, thing that they like to do because they just enjoy raffing. And so people don't want to do it. And without raffs, we have no games. And so I thought, you know, it's an important point to make, and hopefully it resonates with some of the folks who are listening, just being mindful of the conversations you have. You know, they say, there's a saying that ears have walls and streets have eyes. And that even when you think you're not being heard, someone might hear it. So yeah.
There's no being safe. Also, I'd like to add on to the kitchen talk thing. Also, at team dinners, I can see a lot of kids on one side of the table, parents on the other side, and the parents will talk about this happened. This person that's not here did this. Oh, look at this person. My kid is going to make the team next year. While all the kids are just playing games. And while the parents don't think we hear them, we hear that all the time. So, like, I just think being careful what you say, even if you don't agree with someone else's, like, opinion. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything. As cliche as that is, it's still very true. And it holds to be true no matter what age you are.
Sophia, I just want to make sure you're 13 and not 37. Just confirming one more time because you waked out some wisdom over here. So, all right. So we're going to jump to our next question, which is just about practice, right? And what in practice that you really enjoy or don't enjoy? Maybe you could give an example of each and why.
Starting with enjoy. The coach interaction that I've had, especially with the current organization I'm with, the way that coaches don't just, if you're doing something wrong, they don't just let you do it wrong. They'll come up to you in the nicest way possible and say, hey, maybe you could try this. And I know it seems annoying, but stopping drills and telling everyone what they're doing, like, incorrectly, especially on, like, offense, defense drills, a lot of the time people will start off defending or using their offensive powers incorrectly, and then the coach will point out an easier way to do something, and then everyone will be like just 100 times better at the drill, and you can see the difference both on and off the ice. And for a bad thing about practice, maybe rotation drills, because it gets old. Just having like a few drills set up in each corner, and I understand how you're trying to like you make the best out of your time and not just having one big drill. But I enjoy the big drills, like using the entire ice or scrimmages, a lot more than I enjoy shooting at a net in a corner for 20 minutes and then going to a different corner to do a slightly different drill. But I don't think that's something that's going to get changed anytime soon.
Yeah, unfortunately, I feel like it's a big part of the game. I don't know if you remember the movie Miracle on Ice about the 1980s Olympic team. I'm sure you know everybody knows Herb Brooks and his amazing coaching style. And there's a scene where he just, you know, they didn't play well and he gets on the ice and makes them skate suicides, which is, you know, halfway and back. And then he goes again, you know, keeps whistling and they're all like puking and stuff. He's like again, again. And he's just, you know, while the other team is just watching them. After a game. And so, you know, it's kind of like, I tell my athletes, I tell them that's my favorite drill. Because if you can do suicides, you can kind of do anything, you know, like if you can skate for 3 minutes straight with full stops or run, right? 3 minutes straight on the court or in the field, nonstop. That's how long is your shift?
Like 40 seconds.
So if you could do that for 3 minutes, guess what you're going to do in those 40 seconds?
Go hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it just amplifies everything we do. So those drills, that is boring, as grindy as they are, I'm like, learn to love those. Sure, I don't know if you have the same experience with the...
Well, I wanted to ask Sophia about those drills that she doesn't like. Do you not like them because they're boring and predictable? Or do you not like them because they're not helping you? You don't think they're helping you get any better. Like, I want to know why you, I heard what you like, but I know you can't do that for an entire practice. So there's these things going on in the corner, too boring, or you don't feel like you're improving.
I don't feel like I'm improving. I understand that repetition is key in a lot of things. But it's not presented to me in a way as an athlete that I feel like I'm being helped. And also like the repetitiveness is just go hard, go again every few seconds. And I'd rather skate suicides at that point because the on and off is so much more grueling to me that I'd rather just go hard for 3 minutes and then go off for 3 minutes. Like just the every few seconds you're skating to the corner and back and shooting. It's a lot of repetition, which is good for you, and a lot of not helpful. It's just little bursts of energy that you have to spit out after 40 times of doing the same drill because you're broken up into all these sections. So you only have like six kids in your group. So maybe making the drill a little bit longer would make it more fun.
You know, I'm really glad you guys brought this up because I think, you know, one of the things that I talk to my partner and coach I work with a lot is how the kids see the game in the drill. And I feel like it's a difficult thing to do. And sometimes we as coaches, like I could be on the ice by myself and play a full 5-on-5 game. Because my imagination takes me there. I could be on the ice for 4 hours, skating up and down, shooting, you know, playing. Like, I see the game in my head when I play. But that's not the same for everybody. And a lot of times you have athletes doing the drill, but it's almost like putting a check mark and saying, I did it. Because coach said to do it. Boom. But they don't actually envision when you're coming out on the two, you know, I'll give you a great example. We had a 2-on-1, for example, and two kids coming out and they're switching sides and they're weaving and they're going 2-on-0, they're shooting the goals. As soon as you put a defenseman in the middle, all of a sudden it's straight lines and nobody knows what to do.
Yeah. I can tell you one time I've ever passed back and forth and swerved with someone in a game, and that was like a year ago. That was one time I've ever done a drill on the ice. And I don't know when I'm going to have to see a cone in a game and be like, this is my chance, and do a 360 around the cone and then shoot. But once that happens, I'll let you know.
Yeah. No, it's very hard to make that cone a reality, right? A real person.
Yeah.
Like to look at the orange cone, we joke around sometimes when I play with my friends, I'll throw a cone on the ice and be like, hey, Mike, that's you. You know, as a joke, you know, that's how, you know, people kind of make fun of each other. But it's actually very difficult because you're skating around the cones and then you got to imagine that that's a real person. Shani, I don't know if you had a similar experience and what you do in those situations.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is from a coaching perspective. I think it's valuable for us to say, what are the things that frustrate me the most in a game? And do these drills that I'm doing address the thing that's frustrating me the most? And mistakes are in two categories. It was a skill mistake, like I didn't have the skill to execute the thing, or it's a decision mistake. I made the wrong decision at the wrong time, didn't see the cue, etc. And I think what I'm hearing Sophia saying is those drills get boring for me because it's just the same skill repeating over and over. So another way of saying that is that's blocked practice. Anybody that on here wants to Google the difference between blocked and random practice, the research shows that blocked practice does not improve skill very well in the long run. And maybe that's what Sophia is saying. The drill is boring because it's a repetition of a skill and there's no decision to be made. And a lot of the decision, a lot of the mistakes that get made in games are decision mistakes. Yes, skill mistakes. But I always ask coaches, what drills are you working on to improve decision making with your players?
I love that. Yeah, this is for all the coaches that are watching or, you know, people considering to be coaches. This is a great, great point. I love that blocked versus random practice analogy, Shani. And I think it's so important that you brought up the research because I feel like there's a lot of people who coach, but then not a lot of people who invest the time into educating themselves about coaching. And so while they may know the game and they may know how to skate and how to play, they need additional information, right? They need to grow and understand what works for their athletes and what doesn't work. And again, sometimes what Sophia and her teammates reflect on what they see and feel on the ice, right? And drive the practice from that point of view. So, Sophie, if you talk a little bit about, how you feel when a teammate or somebody else on your team earns an award or becomes an MVP of a game, you know, how does that make you feel?
So I understand that the main answer that you would probably get from the majority of people you ask this question is, I'm frustrated. Like, I deserve it. They don't. But a lot of the time when I see people getting these awards, there's a reason. Like, they scored the game-winning goal. They had this really good play, and it makes me really happy to see someone getting recognition for what they did and what they deserve, because sometimes I feel like I'm not in a position where I deserve, like, an award or MVP thing or stuff like that when I see other people that deserve it way more than me.
That's very interesting and humble approach. Why do you think you react that way as opposed to, I played just as good. I was up there. I did my thing. Like, how come that person gets it?
I think it was from learning from earlier years, like squirts. We did this at my old organization that I love very dearly, that we had this hard helmet. And if you did the best, you got the hard helmet. And I think I got it once. I don't think I really deserved it at that point. I think the coach just kind of felt bad for me. But I have like all these experiences of sitting in that locker room, remembering that one really good play I had, and then seeing someone else get it. And every time I was really disappointed. And I think I just learned from that at some point to say, well, why am I disappointed? Because I didn't get it. Well, why didn't you get it? Well, I didn't do this thing as good as that person. Okay, then do that. Like, I don't have a reason to be disappointed if I have, like, evidence of they deserved it. And I need to work harder to deserve it next time, if that's what I want.
Yeah, no, that's a really great perspective. I think that's something that a lot of folks need to really be able to share. I'll give you an example. I've seen during tryouts, kids from this played on the same team, and then the next year there's a tryout, and one or two kids really advanced, and they get pulled up to a better team. And then the kids who are not, and the parents, especially of those kids who didn't get pulled up, get really frustrated. And they get really, they could leave the organization saying, hey, my kid should have been up there.
Yeah, like I was talking about earlier with the team dinner talks, as I'll call them. I remember hearing all this, oh, I think my kid's going to make majors. Oh, no, my kid's going to make majors too. This year, two kids from our team went up a level, too. So I think that parents can get overly excited about moving up sometimes, but I think that there's a different perspective to be seen there. Like, if you try hard, you'll get what you want.
Yep. And just for folks who are listening to the show, we are going to have individual episodes with the parents as well, where we will explore their perspective of why they put their kids into the sport in the first place. What is your ultimate goal in making your child an athlete or helping your child become an athlete? And, I think one of the most difficult things is disconnecting yourself again from the equation, that it's not about you. My kid has been playing hockey since he was four. He's turning 11 now. And 2 days ago, we had a conversation about, do you still want to do this? Do you like hockey? Do you want to keep playing? Because you had a couple of days where you just didn't seem happy. You didn't smile. You didn't enjoy it. You just seemed off. I said, is that just, you're just, not feeling well? You're tired because you have some state tests, right, coming up in school, nervous about that. So there's a lot of things that impact the way a player feel. But, I have those conversations. They got to be open and say, hey, listen, it's not my dream. My dream is to be a coach and play with my friends and, on Tuesday night till 11 o'clock at night. you know, what's yours?
I want to play for women's hockey, and eventually I hope to become a women's coach, because I know eventually, like, maybe school will catch up to me and I won't be able to play on the teams, but I think I'd enjoy coaching just as much. I love the idea of being able to, like, help other people get to a thing, like, get to a level that I could never imagine being, and being a part of that journey with other people, I think would be, like, a lot of fun.
That's amazing. I think one of the most beautiful things that my friend that I coach with once told me, and I still remember it to this day, he said, if you had 100 kids, out of the 100 kids, you had 10 that played, you know, some sort of high AAA, Division One, whatever. He said, but if you had one or two that became coaches, you're successful. If there are people who actually grow up playing the game and they want to now give back to the game and they want to continue to do it, and usually, you know, you don't just coach, you still play, you still get, you're still active in the community. And so having athletes like that and developing athletes that way is, you know, is how you build a legacy. Shivani, I don't know if you have anything to add on that one.
Yeah, I think
I already feel like Sophia, you kind of already are a coach. Yeah. My guess is you're probably influencing your teammates more than you maybe realize, and that's what leaders do. Even there are great leaders who don't wear the C on their jersey. So I already think you are starting to do that. And what I was going to say is, don't wait till your playing career ends. Like, be a coach. You can be a coach every day when you show up with your team, because you've got a lot of wisdom and mental toughness that can help people now. You don't need to save it for years down the road.
Yeah, and you know what I do with the Junior Rangers programs, because a lot of times we do the learn to play and beginners. So I get, I invite all the kids from my travel team to come down and coach and help coach the little kids and skate with them and you know, sometimes, you know, walk with them and teach them how to, you know, give them some attention. And it is such a great humbling experience. I always get five or six kids who will show up. And we have, you know, four or five coaches on the ice, and they see how the coaches are coaching, and but they also give, you know, they're kind of like that in between. Like, hey, I was like you 3 years ago, and now look at me, look how I can skate, you know? And these kids are like super excited to have this like older brother type of experience on the ice.
Yeah. I do have one example of that from a few years ago. I think I was still like a squirt. From learn to skate happening at rinks around. And I used to play for a team that had a learn to skate going on. And my dad would go to coach and he'd always be like, do you want to come with me? And you can demonstrate stuff. And I loved doing that, because seeing all the people that are about to be like hockey players and could eventually develop into some of the best hockey players in the world, just seeing like the little starts of them is kind of really, really humbling. So I love doing that.
Excellent. I love that.
Ilya, before you ask the next thing, there's a learning in here that I really think we need to go back to, that Sophia said, because you asked her about, does it bother you when someone else wins awards?
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the underlying theme, this theme has come up more than once. Mental toughness, part of mental toughness, and the best athletes in the world are not afraid to self-reflect. So when Sophia said, I'm not afraid of not a winning award, I can be happy for someone else, because then it just shows me the learnings. I'm not afraid to go in and say, how come I didn't win that award? Oh, here's some things I need to work on. When we don't do that, we're in defend mode. This is when our ego kicks in to be right. I should have won that. How come? This isn't fair. I may as well just go eat worms and dirt. Now there's no self-reflecting. Sophia, that this thing that you figured out, that it's okay to be imperfect. You're never going to win the award all of the time. There's times when you should have won the award and you didn't. There were times when you did win the award and you shouldn't have. Awards are things that we don't have control over. But we do have control over self-reflecting and taking the lessons and the learnings that come every time we step on the ice. We have to take the happy with the crappy.
Yep. That's so nicely said, Shania. I love that. And thank you for making that point. I did want to, point out Carly. She is one of the scouts for women's hockey, and she actually was on the show as well. And so she has been, we had conversations outside of the podcast, and she's been absolutely amazing with girls. So if anybody's looking for women's hockey information about scouting and colleges and things like that, she's a great resource. You could just message me or find her on Facebook or Instagram. She's absolutely great. And make sure to check out that episode as well. And I do have one more question for Sophia from Jude that I wanted to put up. We'll take one more here. And he's asking, what do you do when you're losing a game and how do you help your teammates?
So like I said earlier, communication is key. And letting them, like, softball on the bench, like, oh, that was such a bad play. I'm such a bad player. You can't let them do that. And just always making sure they have a positive mindset and even giving them goals too. Like, especially when I'm on defense and I have a partner that doesn't feel like they're having a good game, just going to them and saying, hey, this next – shift, I want you to take the puck and I want you to skate it. And I want you to skate it all the way to the other end and you're going to score a goal. I've had that happen once and the person that I was with skated it up and she almost scored. And it's the best feeling ever when you see, hey, I mean, I kind of contributed to that. Obviously, you're not the one that did it and there's a choice being made by them to actually do it and take your advice, but you're the one giving the advice. So I think it's, yeah, the best thing you can do.
So for Jude, who asked that question, what I kind of heard you say is when things aren't going well, it's helpful to remind their teammates of things that they're good at. Because when things aren't going well, what are we usually thinking about? All the things that we're bad at. But what you did, you reminded your partner, hey, you can skate this dang puck down there and get a freaking good shot on net. You just reminded them of something that they know they can do and something that they are good at. That's coaching right there, Sophia, just so you know.
Absolutely. And that's so great because I think it's so important that teammates cheer each other on, mm-hmm. on the bench. You know, it's such a huge difference because it really makes you feel like you're part of something bigger than you. And it's such a huge motivational factor. You know, when the bench is quiet and, you know, when COVID happened and we saw it with the NHL, right? And in some of the other professional sports, NBA and even baseball, right? They had the cardboard cutouts of people in the stands just to make it feel like there's somebody there. But the game just feels a little different. Like the energy is just not there. And so if the stadium can create so much energy for the athletes that they just explode emotionally, you know, the bench and those guys and your girls in your locker room, you know, they really can do the same thing. So I really appreciate that perspective. And I know we're coming up on the hour here. I didn't want to mention Howie's Hockey Tape. You can get 10% off with Howie's on any hockey little tape and they have various resources with the code PODOLSKIY10. Check out wargatehockey.com. They have the lower face cage protection with a visor, which is great. Again, 10% off with 10 PODOLSKIY. And I think just getting some final thoughts before we depart. Sophia, anything else you'd like to tell parents, players, coaches that they can take away with them after this episode?
Going back to a point I made earlier with opinions, your opinion matters the most, more than your coaches, more than your parents. You decide what's best for you, and your voice should always be heard. And if you don't feel like your voice is being heard, it's always okay to talk to a coach or your parents or both your coach and parents at the same time.
Excellent. Excellent. Shawnee, anything to add?
I've worked with hundreds of athletes like Sophia, and what I hope that people see and heard is how smart they are. They know so much more than we think they know. They are more capable than we often give them credit for. If we learn to step back so they can step up, if we learn to ask good questions and have conversations instead of lectures, kids have a lot to say, and they're very smart. I hope we can let them drive the bus a little more often.
I love that. I do have, you know, another message here, Sophie. You're such a leader. So there's a lot of positive comments coming in throughout the show. So really appreciate everybody for tuning in. Again, we'll be back next Wednesday with another youth athlete and trying to bring a lot of attention and a voice to the athletes. And hopefully we can all learn and get better from their perspective. Thank you guys very much. That's our show for today. Again, please make sure to check out ShawneeHardy.com and ThePodolskyMethod.com for additional info, and subscribe and tune into the show next Wednesday as we continue. Sophia, thank you again so much for joining. Thanks to your parents for allowing you to join. Thank you for Shawnee for connecting us all together. And this has been absolutely amazing. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Yeah.